just me and the Blackhawks doing a loop around the warning track and outfield, carrying the cup, having people scream. Every now and then I'd hear, Big Cat, what are you doing?
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
And I get there, and right when I see my buddy at the door, I look up, and this mustache goon is spraying champagne all over these people. And I'm like, it's Taves, then Billy Deck, then Big Cat.
They get drunk. Oh, they're real big drinkers, all of them. You know that. And bang, someone's lying in the gutter. Well, nobody's blaming them for it. That's the way they are, by nature.
My boss was joking about that today. Like, you go to Rocket, and you're like, all right, well, I'm getting champagne. I'm getting wet with champagne. I smell gross, and I'm all sticky, but at least it was Jonathan Toews spraying champagne on me. No, it was just this fat guy in the corner of the window.
The conversation you come to love here on the Shoot Around, Barstool Big Cat, Sam Paniatovich on WGN Radio and WGN Plus. Welcome to it. A lot has happened in the last couple of weeks, and this has been a fortunate place to live. That's for sure.
That's not a static open, is it? We're not going to use that open every time, are we?
No.
Because that's what my voice sounds like? Jesus.
Is it that bad?
I mean, you never want to hear your own voice. I can't do it.
I'm surprised you know what a static open is.
Hey, I actually just kind of mashed two words there, so who knows if that's really what they say in the biz. I don't know. You guys are in the biz. I'm not. So, but the story still stands. It was a great week.
Yeah, and if you missed that episode, the Cup Celebration, WGNplus.com, search for the Shoot-Around. Brett Jackson, Alan Poppy across the glass. As I'm going through my hockey withdrawals, I've already watched Mystery Alaska and Miracle in the last week.
That's sad. I will admit that,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's sad.
Well.
Why? All right, so let's get right into it.
Fireworks at Wrigley Field. Let's hear what we heard on Monday night.
Living in the air out in the deep right.
Back-to-back wins over the Dodgers. The Cubs knock off Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke. These kids are fun to watch.
This is the best cure for the Blackhawks withdrawal that everyone is going through, because there is nothing like playoff hockey. I'll say that. You know, obviously the season ended the best way it possibly could, but you still woke up this week and you're like, oh man, like I need the adrenaline rush of playoff hockey. But this Cubs team, I love this team. This is starting to feel, and this might get a little crazy, but this is starting to feel a little bit like that 08 summer when they just couldn't lose, and that team was so much fun, and that was, you know, the 07-08 teams, the last time the Cubs were good. It's been a long 6 years, but they are back, and this team is here to stay. I went into this season, I don't know where your expectations were, I went into this season and I said, all I want is for the Cubs to be within 4 or 5 games of the wild card come mid to late August.
Well, guess what? They're leading the wild card right now.
They're leading the wild card. They are the third best record in the NL. Unfortunately, the other two best records in the NL are in our division.
They're 10 games, well, 9 games over 500, 39 and 30.
I didn't think it would come together this quickly. And you just watch them. They have that feeling. Like, they know they can win any game.
They expect to win. And when a guy like Chris Sinorfia is up to bat in a key situation, and he comes through,
right,
you start to really buy into what's going on the north side. And this is an attitude, and I don't mean attitude in the wrong sense. They have an attitude that we are going to win.
Well, it's twofold. One is, outside of Castro and Rizzo, these guys didn't have to go through the really, really dark days there.
Oh, the worst era of Cubs baseball,
yeah,
ever?
Where it was just get your, you know, teeth kicked in every single night, no matter what. Starlin Castro has seen some stuff. He has seen some stuff. So you got that. You got these new kids that are cocky, and they haven't seen this. They don't know what it's like to be on a 100-loss team. And then you just can't understate Joe Maddon. He is such a great manager, and it's more than just in-game stuff. because I know the people have been on him a little bit about, you know, maybe going to the bullpen too early, maybe not relying on, you know, letting his starters work through things, maybe, you know, relying on the wrong guys, Schlitter, where he just had like a Schlitter thing for the first month of the season. But what he has given to this team, the mojo, the juju, the je ne sais quoi, whatever you want to call it, it's something else. And that's why this team feels different than every Cubs team in the last 6 years.
Hashtag we are good. Starlin Castro has been in the major leagues for 6 years. This is year number six. He's only played for five managers.
Yeah.
Pinella, Quadi, Swaim, Renteria.
Like I said, he's seen some things.
How many hitting coaches?
Yeah.
I feel like there's been more hitting coaches than managers. He has had so many different types of direction. We want you to change your approach. We'd like you to change the way
right?
you throw to first. And he has been told everything over and over
which
again.
Which just hammers my point even more. I got into a little Twitter war, blog war, whatever you want to call it this week. Because I said, Starlin Castro, now there's no guarantees in life, but Starlin Castro is going to have 3,000 hits. He is going to be 25 years old. He is 25 years old. He turned 25 in March. At the end of this season, he will still be 25 years old, and he will have 1,000 hits. He will be one of the fastest guys to 1,000 hits. He will be 250 hits more than Pete Rose at the same age. And you just said everything that has been going against him. He's been on awful teams. He's had no protection. He's had different hitting coaches, different managers. The guy is going to have 3,000 hits, and he will be a borderline Hall of Famer. Hate all you want, but I am right, and you are wrong.
919 hits to date. And he's one of those polarizing players that just Chicago fans can never really all get on board with. When he does something well, you have the pro-Castro crowd. When he does something wrong, you have the anti-Castro crowd. They just can't accept him for what he is. It's sort of frustrating.
Here's the problem with Castro, and I employ the biggest Castro hater probably in Chicago, who is an unbelievable Cubs writer. Everyone should be reading him. Carl on Barstool Chicago. He knows his baseball in and out.
He's already trading Castro.
He hates Castro.
He's already traded him twice.
Yeah, so I understand. I mean, and I trust his opinion. But the problem with Castro and what he does, he doesn't help his supporters, is stuff like Friday night. That was Little League stuff. When he just forgets that he's playing baseball and that he's on a Major League Baseball field. I can deal with errors. Errors happen. No one's perfect. You got to know that the shortstop position, to have a hitter like him, he's not going to be a perfect fielder. It's just there aren't guys like that. Addison Russell might be that guy, but Starlin Castro's not that guy. You can't have stuff like Friday night where you just have the mental lapses that are backbreaking, and that's old Cubs. That's not 2015 Cubs. That's old Cubs. Those are habits that will, when the games didn't matter, Starlin Castro could get away with that stuff. Because you say, well, he's our one good guy.
The Cubs lead the major leagues in walk-off wins. They have 9 right now. And I've covered the team since 2012. Maybe this will make a lot of sense here. From 12 to 13 to 14 in the press box at Wrigley, my mindset was, how are they going to blow this? The mindset this year is, who's the hero tonight?
I mean, just look back to last year. Do you remember the 100-year anniversary at Wrigley when they were up, I don't know, what were they up, 5-2, and they blew a 5-2 lead in the ninth?
Mm-hmm.
That was so classic Cubs. And everyone just kind of sat there and said, oh, well, kind of expected this one to go south. Now you have the confidence that they can come back late. They can hold leads late. I'd still obviously like to see another bullpen arm. You need another bat. You hope that Soler is that bat. And I don't know about you. Do you think they're going to go get another pitcher? Because I keep saying Jason Hamill's going to come down to earth, but he was fantastic last night. And Arrieta and Lester, those are two bona fide aces.
I look at the bullpen as more of a concern.
Yeah.
How about Jonathan Papelbon? Does that excite you?
Yeah, no, he's actually been an okay pitcher. And, you know, he's obviously got some history with Theo and Jed, so they know what they're getting. I would be all in on a guy like Papelbon. I also think from everything that I've read and heard that David Price would like to come here in the offseason, so maybe that plays into your plans. And you
I wouldn't oversell because you don't have to.
Right.
You've waited so long, and then all of a sudden it's 2015. Now we want to win just for this. Don't Kenny Williams yourself.
No, of course not. But you do have some chips, and they and we've talked about this, and I think everyone who has followed the Cubs and their farm system the last few years, they realize that the Cubs have drafted more position players and bats than they have positions. So at some point there's going to be an odd man out. We know that. You know, Javi Baez, Addison Russell, Starlin Castro, not all those guys are going to stick here forever. So do you try to trade someone and get that, you know, another great starter, or do you hold tight, go for the bullpen, hope that Soler's the extra bat? I don't know. You can't go wrong here because the Cubs are back. We're talking about them.
Called Theo a bit of a hoarder, which is a little bit of a hoarder. Somebody did bring this up to me last week. If the Marlins called and said, we want Castro, Soler, and a pitcher, and we give you Giancarlo Stanton.
I think you asked me this question when we went to we did our community service, and we went down to the cell.
Yeah.
Shout out to that awful team. We can talk about
we'll
that
talk
later,
about them,
yeah,
in about 60 seconds, and I know these guys are chomping at the bit, too.
Yeah, I would do that deal. But like you said, the Cubs are in a perfect position where they have a lot of assets. They have a lot of talent on the field right now. They don't have to panic. They don't have to do anything. They went out and spent money a year early on John Lester. So far, it's looked okay. I mean, obviously, he's been up and down, but I think that you can rely on a John Lester come September and October. I just love this team. It's exciting to finally have a Cubs team to get excited about. And doesn't it feel like summer more? It feels more like summer when the Cubs are relevant and they kind of like ground everything in the summer. You're like, all right, well, it's an event to go to a Cubs game, and Wrigley's popping and Wrigleyville's popping. It's just everything feels right.
I just cringed. I'm getting embarrassed now when I wear my Sox hat around. I'm getting flat out embarrassed. I watched the game today. I had it on, and I'm excited. Chris Sale struck out 6 in the first 3 innings. Then he gets pounded the very next inning. They made, I think, 3 more errors today. I tweeted this out after the game. In the AL Central, against AL Central opponents the last 3 years, the White Sox are 73 and 116. That's 39%.
That's astounding.
That is an embarrassment. I'm embarrassed to be a Sox fan right now.
So, obviously, I don't watch a lot of White Sox baseball. How does Robin Ventura still have a job? I mean, that's a real question that I don't understand. Jerry Reinsdorf is just too loyal?
Well, he wasn't loyal for Tom Thibodeau. That didn't matter, did
well,
it?
Well, he was for a while. But how does he still have a job?
I look at the front office, man. Since 2005, they've been to 1 postseason. Name me a position player that they've developed since 2005 that has panned out. Somebody that they have brought in.
Gordon Beckham, who's now back as your pinch hitting
extraordinaire.
Okay,
how many all-star appearances for Gordon Beckham?
I agree.
You look starting in the 90s, you brought up Frank Thomas, and then you had Robin Ventura, maybe Joe Creedy. You didn't draft Paul Konerko. They haven't been able to see and develop talent in that lineup. You look around that lineup, I use this term with you all the time. There are 3 automatic outs in that lineup every day.
Well, I think the biggest problem with the White Sox is you can go 2 different ways when you have a team that's not performing. And one way is to go the Cubs way and basically bottom out. And it was dark, and we're now coming to the light. It was very, very dark for the last 5 years. Or you can try to rebuild on the fly, and I feel like that's kind of what the White Sox have done here. They've added some guys. They haven't done what you're saying, and you know, develop talent and draft well, and basically say, hey, we're gonna be bad right now, but in 5 years we're gonna have the nucleus to be good. And now they're stuck.
They have done that, though. They have bottomed out. They've drafted in front of the Cubs the last 2 years.
Right.
So they've bottomed out while rebuilding.
Right, but they still have tried. Yeah, it's like a half rebuild. Because they still tried to, you know, they still tried to get guys like Samardzija.
And they spend
money.
Yeah,
so it's the best of both worlds. You're terrible, and you're putting a product on the field that you think is going to win, and you're bottoming out. So you're drafting high. It's the Cubs.
Yeah, but that's not by design.
Yeah, but you're still happening, though.
Yeah, I know, but no, but that's why you're upset right now as a White Sox fan, because it's not by design. Every White Sox fan thought they were going to compete this year, so you can't be like, well, now we're going to draft high. That's not by design. Last year, you were supposed to be better. This year, you're supposed to be better. So you're almost – I get what you're saying. They are kind of bottoming out, but by design, they're supposed to be good, and they had everyone excited this year, and they're god-awful.
This model where you just try and build the champion via free agency doesn't work. Especially in baseball. I mean, even when the Yankees were winning rings in the 90s, most of those guys were homegrown. When they started this, they won the World Series, it was at 09 or 10 when they spent a little bit of money. But more times than not in baseball, when you overpay for a free agent or a handful of free agents, it comes back to bite you. You have to draft and develop.
Yeah.
And the Sox have been one of the worst teams in the game. Now, they've got a couple of young arms, Rodon and Carson Fulmer. Did you watch him on Monday?
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
He was fantastic for
Vanderbilt.
He's going
to be great. But then how old is Sale now?
26.
I mean, poor Sale. He obviously has a long career ahead of him, but that guy is so good, and he's been on such bad teams.
I would love to watch him just once.
In the playoffs.
Pitch in the playoffs.
Yeah. He reminds me actually of his teammate, Jeff Samardzija, who was – you know, dependable. He obviously is not Chris Sale. I'm not going to say that. But he played on some really, really bad teams. And you just kind of feel bad for a guy like that who goes out there every 5 days and puts you in a chance to win, and your team does nothing to back you up. That game the other night, was it Friday night?
Yeah, Alan, you were there on Friday. How many people? About 10,000? 10,000 people in attendance for Sale?
Yeah, they said, I think the sold attendance was like maybe just over 50% tickets sold. But there was not near 50%.
And what did he strike out? 14?
Yeah, 14.
And the bullpen blew it.
Yeah, that was when Robertson blew it. And that night, he was the only third pitcher in Major League history to do, what, 6 games of 12 or more? He joined baseball elite that night. And
Pedro,
Randy Johnson, Randy Chris Johnson. Sale. Those are the three.
That's some nice company there.
And I've heard the reports, and Chris Ranji wrote a piece about it in the Daily Herald, and a lot of national writers are hinting at trading Chris Sale. I cringe. I think of when the Expos traded Randy Johnson and what he developed into. And then the team didn't even last in Montreal.
Yeah, I mean, if you trade Chris Sale, White Sox fans would riot, I would assume.
That's all you have. I mean, I would rather trade Abreu at this point. But you finally have one of the most dominant. Who's more dominant in White Sox history than Chris Sale on the mound?
Nobody.
But
the problem is now is that Chris Sale is actually untradeable. And not because he's so good. It's because he is so good and his contract is unbelievable.
Right.
That any team that calls to trade for him, you're going to ask for everything. And any team that's smart enough won't give you that. So you look at the teams that have prospects that you're willing to trade with.
The Dodgers.
Boston.
The Blue Jays.
And so say the Dodgers call you up, you're asking for Uriah and you're asking for Seager automatically off the bat, and they're not going to trade two of the top five prospects in baseball for him, and you're going to want more on top of that. So Chris Sale is kind of untradeable because you can't get what he's worth, and no one's going to be willing to give up what he actually is worth.
No, who they need to trade is Samardzija. And they might even trade him back to the Cubs, to the north side. Although, that's obviously
Addison Russell.
I mean, that's a three. I mean, that's.
Can we have Addison Russell?
That will end up being the trade of all time. With Billy Beane basically desperate, he gives the Cubs a second baseman who should end up being a shortstop, all-star, who's going to be an unbelievable player for 3 months of Jeff Samardzija. I mean, he obviously had him for a year and a half, but they then turned around and gave him back to the White Sox. So, I don't know. The White Sox, I feel bad how they've done it, how they've looked for their fans. I don't know how Robin Ventura still has a job. How do you just not fire him?
They just look defeated, and he leads that charge of
man
walking.
I'm not the type of guy who jumps out and says, you got to fire the guy, you got to fire the guy. But when you were supposed to be a contender. Can we say that?
Well, Vegas had the over-under for the Sox at 78, and Baseball Prospectus had them at 77 wins. So the numbers people didn't
think maybe not.
The optimism here, you're right, was we're winning the Central.
The optimism was that's a rotation that can get you. You have a 1-2-3 there.
Well, and the offense would hit the damn ball.
Right. So something's obviously amiss. I know that they're a really poor team on the base pass. I know they've made some pretty bad errors. That's stuff that falls on the manager at some point.
He loses them more games than he wins them. That's for sure. Since we're keeping it with baseball here, heavy baseball in the shoot-around WGN+, in the least surprising breaking news of all time, Pete Rose bet on baseball as a player. The least surprising news.
I really
thought that he just picked up gambling when he started managing, right?
Well, I said, and I got some heat for it, I don't have a problem with him betting on baseball as a player. As a manager, that's a problem because you can impact, you know, if you're managing and you're saying, if you're managing a game in April, like the seventh game of the World Series, and you're extending your starter, you're burning out your bullpen, this, that, and the other, that's a problem. As a player, I don't know. If you're betting on yourself as a player, I really don't have a problem with it. I get people say, well, he could get in trouble with the bookie, and then he's starting to do stuff that, you know, unsavory things, throwing games. Pete Rose is a hyper-competitive guy who clearly needed the action, probably still does. I just don't – I can't get upset about a player betting on themselves. I just can't do it.
To carry on your point about the manager, the bookies know – when Pete Rose supposedly bets on only his team, what do the bookies learn when he doesn't bet on the Reds?
See, Pete Rose to me strikes me as a guy who bet on his team every single night, no matter what. He would just be like, he'd probably bet the board and be like, oh, and throw the Reds in. It was almost like a standing reservation. Like, you know he's going to bet the Reds no matter what the line is or anything like that because he is a hyper-competitive, crazy psycho. So I don't know. I know that this isn't new. None of this is new.
No, you didn't learn anything new. And how about this now? Who did Major League Baseball just sign a deal with? DraftKings.
Right.
Which is glorified fantasy gambling.
Right. But so, because it's a game of skill, it's okay. Even though, I mean, the gambling's skill too.
I always thought that Pete Rose would go in once he passed away. And now I'm not so sure anymore, because if there's one thing that voters, and this is all up to the voters, they got lied to repeatedly, and this is another lie.
But and this stands for steroid guys too. Keeping him out of the Hall of Fame is a joke.
It's a museum.
It's
ups
a museum.
And downs, good and bad.
Like the fact that Barry Bonds isn't in the Hall of Fame is a joke.
I always use this analogy, and we did this last summer when we were on the game. Say we have kids. 20 years from now. And
you like me and you together?
No.
Okay.
Jesus.
Take it easy, man.
You have your own kid. I have my own kid. You have a little big cat with a mustache, and he's 5 years old.
Yep.
And he's walking through Cooperstown. And you get through the 80s, and you get to 1995. And then from 95 until 07, there's nothing there.
Right. Right.
And then you have to explain to him what happened. That's wrong. That's wrong.
I was actually thinking about it randomly, my brain just wandering, how feared of a hitter Barry Bonds was. There was no one ever, ever like him that I've ever seen, and probably anyone has ever seen. When I came up because someone was talking about how he got intentionally walked with the bases loaded. Buck Showalter walked Barry Bonds with the bases loaded. The fact that that guy isn't in the Hall of Fame, I don't care what he did. Put it on a plaque, say he did steroids, list all the stuff, list Balco, do this, that, and the other. He needs to be in the Hall of Fame. Pete Rose needs to be in the Hall of Fame. Anyone who's had that kind of impact on the game needs to be in the Hall of Fame.
I smell a cheater's wing.
I don't care.
A wing for the cheaters.
Yeah, or the guys that are cool enough to play a little bit outside the rules.
A lot of bad guys in the Hall of Fame, especially in baseball. A lot of racists. Let's see. The most Cy Youngs, the most hits, the most homers, all not in the Hall of Fame.
That makes sense. So Pete Rose, Barry Bonds, and Roger Clemens?
All not in the Hall of Fame.
That's ridiculous.
Just getting started here, about halfway home on the shoot-around. He's Barstool Big Cat at Barstool Big Cat. I'm Sam Panayotovic at SP Shoot. We'll talk a little Puff Daddy, Kevin Love opting out, some new rules in the NHL, a hockey team in Vegas? Uh-oh. Uh-oh, plus foul ball guy and the mailbag. This is WGN Radio and WGN Plus. Welcome back, Shoot Around Podcast, WGN and WGN Plus. Sam Panayotovic and Barstool Big Cat will do the mailbag at the back end of the show, but let's start here as you hear the music with Puff Daddy, Puff P. Diddy. Some trouble out on the West Coast as he had a problem when UCLA strength coach Sal Alossi kicked out Diddy's son, Justin. He threw him out of an offseason workout, and Diddy was not happy.
I'm totally torn on this because obviously Diddy's a clown for getting upset here. He's a clown for showing up to practice. His son sounds like a clown. But part of the deal isn't part of the deal here that Neuheisel, you know, brings on Diddy's son and they get, you know, some exposure and they get some, not street cred, but whatever you want to call it. They get a little boost in recruiting. And then they take care of Diddy's son, and they make sure he's happy. And this, you know, this stuff shouldn't happen. So I actually kind of take both sides. Diddy's an idiot, but Rick Neuheisel, you got to just kind of keep this behind closed doors. Don't call the cops. I don't care how mad Diddy is. I don't care who he throws a kettlebell at. And the strength and conditioning guy, I don't know if you remember, he's the Jets guy who tripped a Dolphins player. So he's a clown in his own right.
Clowns everywhere. It's yep. The circus. It's in town. Here's the report that Diddy entered Sal Alossi's office and started screaming swear words at the coach. Alossi then had some interns try and take Diddy out, and they threatened to bring in security. The kid tried to get his dad out of the office, and then Diddy said, "Don't touch me," to Sal Alossi after all these F-bombs, and he grabs the kettlebell, which I don't know how much it is. I don't know what the over-under is on the weight for the kettlebell, but he tries to assault one of the guys.
Diddy seems to me like he's kind of soft. And no offense to Diddy, I'm sure he's listening to this, but he seems a little soft in the upper body, so I bet you that was probably like a 15, 20-pounder.
He was released from a campus jail after he posted $50,000 bail, and Diddy claimed that he was acting in self-defense. He shows up, starts going off, and then he pleads.
But you know what? I sort of actually believe him because this Sal Alossi guy is a nutball. I mean, he tripped someone on an NFL field with a million cameras. Do you trust him?
No. No. I do think, and the best take I think I've heard about this was, did you catch what Dan Dockich said about this?
No.
He said, if my parents had any idea what Bobby Knight used to do to us,
right,
they would have been mortified. And that's just, athletes are coddled now. Let's face it.
Yeah.
They've got 50,000 Twitter followers. Okay. They've got Facebook pages. And you can't – I don't agree with it, but it's almost over-coddling.
Yes, it is. But that's the deal here. You need to coddle Diddy's son. That is the unwritten, you know, contract when Diddy's son – I doubt Diddy's son came to UCLA because he was a five-star recruit. He hasn't played. I think he's in his third year, and he hasn't really even played. So that's the deal. Neuheisel knows the deal. Diddy knows the deal. They all should know the deal. He's going to get coddled, and what are you going to do? Because you have a Combs on your team now. So, it's funny that the Pac-12, though, is getting this kind of insanity. It almost feels like they've arrived in a way because this is stuff for SEC.
Moving to basketball here, Kevin Love, Cavaliers superstar, and the word superstar in quotes there, has opted out and declined his $16.7 million player option, essentially making him an unrestricted free agent. And Love just sounded off on Instagram. He posted a picture of a young Larry David, and you see it right here, with the hashtag mood.
I don't even understand what that means. Kevin Love is going all emo. You know what that is? You know what? So Kevin Love posting a mood picture on Instagram makes me think that he's going to re-sign with the Cavs because that's a LeBron move. He is a straight LeBron. He's a LeBron clone now. He's been brainwashed by LeBron. Who does that? That's like a teenage emo, you know, angsty teenager girl move, and that's LeBron. LeBron does that. He does the mirror selfie, and now Kevin Love does a mood selfie or whatever, a mood picture on Instagram.
So the report is that with the salary cap going up just a little bit, by opting out, he can actually, if he stays with Cleveland, he can move the salary from $16.7 million to 18.9. So this doesn't mean he's not coming back to
Cleveland. No, yeah, and everything he said is that he's coming back to Cleveland. And LeBron's going to opt out too, because so they can both figure out their salary cap and kind of adjust everything.
But here's the problem that I have. Just from building the team tactically, LeBron plays point, but he's essentially a power forward when he's banging you into the post and bringing the ball down to the rim. Tristan Thompson, who needs to be paid, is a power forward. Kevin Love is a power forward. How many millions of dollars are they going to have locked into the number four spot?
Yeah, but you remember who won the title. The Warriors won it with a very small lineup. Who was playing center for them?
Draymond Green.
Right, so he's a power forward. I mean, that's the NBA these days. You want as many threes and fours as you can get and just kind of throw them around and interchange them. Because if you put out a lineup of Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, and LeBron James.
Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't care where they're playing. I don't care what number you want to call them. I don't care what position they are. That's a tough lineup to beat.
So you don't see Kevin Love going to Boston? Maybe
I think he's
going to
listen.
If Aldridge leaves, goes to Portland, goes home to Oregon?
You know,
Lakers?
I think he'll listen to the Lakers. The problem is Kobe. Is Kobe even alive? I don't even know what Kobe is right now. So if it was 5 years ago, he'd probably go to L.A. But why would you want to go play with Kobe's corpse and watch him go out for the year, you know, in mid-December? So,
DeMarcus Cousins, does he stay with Sacramento? Who lasts longer in Sacramento, DeMarcus Cousins or George Karl?
George Karl's an idiot. What is he doing? I mean, I would love DeMarcus Cousins to come to Chicago. Figure out a trade for that.
I've been on this for 2 years.
It's just impossible to figure out a trade where you don't include Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler.
Well, no, the trade you could do Rose.
We're not
Noah.
They're not going to trade Derrick Rose.
Well, I bet you maybe they'd like to. You don't think this manager group would like to get rid of that headache, the Reggie Rose headache, the injury headaches?
I know. It'd be tough. It'd be a tough sell. But, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, George Karl trying to basically blow up. What has George Karl ever won?
Nothing.
Nothing. He's never been to an NBA Finals.
96 with the Sonics.
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay.
And
yeah.
lost to the Bulls.
I'm an idiot. That was a great team. So that's 20 years ago was the last time he saw the NBA Finals.
1996. Yeah, 95-96 season. I did want to pull the tweet up here real quick. This is something. Because when Cousins, did you catch he tweeted out the snake in the grass the other night? Now, there were a couple other players that, and I'm going to look for it right here. He put a list together of about five players that in the last 2 years or so have kind of given it to George Karl, and I'm trying to pull it up here. Ty Lawson's on that list. Carmelo Anthony is on that list.
But, now, I don't like George Karl. And I think that he's probably not the smartest when you're trying to get rid of a DeMarcus Cousins. Ty Lawson, Carmelo Anthony, J.R.
Smith, Andre Iguodala.
Okay, so Andre's okay. But the rest of those guys, I don't know. It's a toss-up. But you're not talking about the hardest-working guys in the NBA, you know, saying that George Karl is a snake in the grass. So I'll reserve judgment from those people saying he's a snake in the grass. But I will say that it's crazy that he's trying to trade. Where would you rank DeMarcus Cousins?
He's the best big man probably right now in the game. Back to the basket center. There aren't
many
left.
Marc Gasol, I'd take over him.
Okay. So
because
1A, Marc
Gasol 1B? Plays defense, and DeMarcus Cousins does not. But, yeah, he'd be a top 15 player in the NBA right now.
Bulls pick 22nd. The draft is tomorrow. I'll be at the Advocate Center, and I'll give you any scoops I might have. 22nd is that basketball hell spot. You weren't good enough to go to the NBA Finals and win. You weren't bad enough to be in the lottery, and now you just pretty much have to wait to see what unfolds. You'll have your board of guys, but there are 21 guys that'll be picked before the Bulls even go. That's not the spot you'd like to be in.
No, of course not. I still think the Bulls can get someone that they – the question will be where they think the front court's going to go, because obviously they're going to try to trade someone. Taj Gibson is hurt and had his ankle surgery.
Yeah,
so
4 months he's out.
He's out for 4 months, so that's going to be tough to trade him. I still think they're trying to figure out a way to get rid of Joakim. They're probably trying to find a way to get rid of Gasol.
Contractually speaking, Noah's done at the end of this year, and then Gibson and Power off the books the next year.
Right. I still think if you're talking about Fred Hoiberg's new offense, he doesn't, he's not going to, and we have the Hoiberg expert as one of our producers. Correct me if I'm wrong, but none of the current big guys are exactly what he wants.
Miritich is probably the closest.
Miritich, yeah, he's off the table. He's not going anywhere. He's the future. But none of those three, the Taj, Joakim, because Joakim can't really shoot. He doesn't have the full athleticism to attack the basket. Gasol doesn't have the full athleticism to attack the basket. And Gibson.
Taj is the closest to what Hoiberg would want.
You want someone on the baseline who, after a pick and roll, can, you know, can make the team make another decision.
Yes.
And somebody that can run the floor.
Runs the floor well,
right.
Yeah.
So I actually wouldn't be shocked, and it's crazy because the front court is clogged right now if the Bulls go for another front court guy, knowing that they're going to get rid of one of the four that they have right now, or one of the three, we should say, because Nico's not going anywhere.
Montrezl Harrell doing anything for you from Louisville? Kevon Looney from UCLA?
You know who I like who's going to probably go more into the late teens is Portis from Arkansas.
Yeah, Bobby Portis.
So if the Bulls can maybe get into a position where they could trade up a couple spots, he's a guy that I could see working in Hoiberg's offense.
I would still look at that backup point guard position because you know Derrick Rose will miss time, whether that's for an injury or for a...
You're saying Kirk Heinrich can't do
graduation
it?
Party. Kirk Heinrich, yeah. Hopefully they trade him somewhere. Maybe they trade him to, like, the Shanghai Saints
Serbia.
Or whatever.
Serbia.
Someone asked me today on Twitter if
Siberia,
I hated Kirk Heinrich.
Like,
I don't hate Kirk Heinrich. I hated what Tom Thibodeau made Kirk Heinrich do. Because Kirk Heinrich shouldn't be doing anything besides sitting on a bench. So... The guy is a nice guy. He was once a great player. Not great. We should say he was a very good player.
College great, pro good.
Yeah, good. Made a lot of money. But, yeah, I agree. You need the backup point guard knowing that Derrick Rose will miss probably 6 months. I don't know.
And it doesn't look like they have the money for a backup point guard. I like Jerian Grant from ND. I like Tyus Jones from Duke. But, again, because you're picking 22nd, those guys will probably be gone.
Delon Wright will be a guy that could be there.
Or Delon Wright from Utah?
Yeah.
Here's something I saw interesting today. If Frank Kaminsky was born in a different country, how much higher would he go in the draft?
It's absolutely true.
I mean, like the white seniors that play in the NCAA get docked all the time.
I think Frank's going to actually have a pretty decent pro career. I'm obviously a Badger fan. And I was a little bit of a doubter. I do think that Decker probably has a higher upside just because he's a more athletic, and that's where the NBA, you know, trends. But Frank, every single time he went up against someone in the tournament that I thought he was going to eat alive,
Gordon would eat him alive 2 years in a row.
Right.
Or no, Aaron Gordon last year or 2 years ago, and then this past year was it Brandon Ashley?
Yeah.
For Arizona?
He handled the big men for Kentucky well. Okafor was lost guarding Frank Kaminsky in the
Okafor
title game.
Okafor was in foul trouble.
Yeah, Frank Kaminsky was the best player on the court for Wisconsin in the title game. He's the only reason they were in that game for a while.
Did you see the Jason Capono quote that said, I should have left UCLA after my freshman year, moved to Yugoslavia, and changed my name to Jason Kaponovic, and I would have been a first-round pick?
It's probably true because these guys, they do their workouts against a chair in an empty gym in the middle of nowhere. They play against, like, I feel like everyone in Lithuania and these foreign countries, they're basically playing against, like, a bunch of 40-year-olds. So then when you have, like, an 18-year-old dunking on everyone, they look unbelievable. And then they come here and they're the soft as a pillow.
Well, it's D-League cast-offs, guys that, like, John Shire, who was good in college, but he ended up playing, they called him the Jewish Jordan because he was playing in Israel, and the footage is grainy, right? It's shot from one of those old camcorders, and you just don't know what these players have, but I do agree. I think if Frank Kaminsky had a little foreign blood in him, he might go top 10.
And it's nice that he doesn't because he's going to go probably in the mid-teens and he's going to get drafted at an appropriate spot. The expectations won't be crazy and he'll have a good pro career because that's the problem. If he was drafted 3 and he ended up being what he's probably going to be, people would call him a bust.
Move to the NHL here. Board of Governors met this week in Las Vegas. The NHL Awards this week in Vegas. Maybe a possible destination for future road trips in the NHL, as there are
three big options. You've got Las Vegas, Quebec City, and Seattle. The NHL is looking to expand in the 2017-18 season. The last time the league expanded, the minimum was $80 million. You had to have $80 million to get a team. What do you think the figure's at right now?
Whew.
Just to get to the table and get a fork and a knife, how much money do you have to enter the conversation?
$400 million?
$500 million.
Oh, okay.
So the league is doing okay, but yeah, we might have an NHL team in Vegas.
I love it. And the stories, it's a blogger's dream, because the stories that are kind of going to come out of teams going to Vegas will be spectacular. And it's a no-brainer in my mind. Wouldn't you, every time the Blackhawks go play in Vegas?
Yes.
I mean,
yes,
immediately. You wouldn't, yes, even have to. I don't even have to finish the question. Every single fan base would travel to an away game in Vegas. The team would stink. They'd have an awful home crowd. But who cares? Every single team would go and travel and take a vacation in Vegas. Imagine if you could just be gambling, you know, at a casino 1 second, and then walk and see the Chicago Blackhawks play the next. That would be unbelievable.
Now look at this arena, the renderings here on Twitter. That is gorgeous.
Yeah.
That building.
I'm all for it.
I'll tell you where I'm not going. Seattle. Quebec City.
Seattle just needs to get the Sonics back. That's really what's got to happen in Seattle.
Yeah, they said Seattle is probably the bottom of the list, because Seattle doesn't even have an arena for a hockey team,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, they were going to build that one in the suburbs and have, right, it be a dual arena.
Right, but right now there's an arena in Quebec, and Sam, you just mentioned that one in Vegas. I think they said it'll be done this spring, so they could accommodate a team around the 17-18 season, but that's why they said Seattle's kind of bottom of the barrel right now.
I don't want them to add a team to Canada. I need them to move a warm weather team to Canada. That's what's got to happen.
A couple changes here, at least in the rule book. There will now be an overtime. Once the puck drops in overtime, it will be 3-on-3.
So the NHL listens to this podcast, because remember a couple weeks ago I said that? I said that actually what they should do in playoff overtime is go 5-on-5 for the first one, 4-on-4, 3-on-3, 2-on-2, until it's just goalies. And that's the smartest thing I've ever probably come up with.
And I had asked, and Alan's been all over the lingo here, I thought, say Taves and Kane commit back-to-back minors, does it go down to 3-on-1? It goes to 4-on-3 and then 5-on-3, right? That's the way it's going to go?
Yeah, you can't have any less than 3 skaters on the ice, so 4-on-3 for a power
that
play,
makes sense.
5-on-3 for a two-minute advantage.
How about the Taves-Kane-Keith line for overtime?
Teravainen-Kane.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be awesome.
Just pick two forwards and put them with Keith.
It's going to be great.
NHL also approved of a coach's challenge, so we'll have challenges in the NHL now.
I like that. It's 2015. We have replay. There's no reason that there shouldn't be the ability for challenges to happen.
And this is an interesting rule, too. Mark Lazarus on Twitter pointing this out. Clubs who pull their goaltender in overtime for an extra attacker will be subject to forfeit their point if the opposing team scores in the empty net. So if you gamble in overtime, which I don't know why you do that anyways, but if you pull your goalie in overtime and the other team scores in an empty net, that point you got for the tie comes off the board.
That makes no sense. Why would anyone pull the
I don't know why they
time?
Would, but that,
so that's the dumbest rule
yeah,
ever.
I agree. Pretty dumb.
The only thing I could think of for that is if you have like an offensive zone draw 10 seconds left of the game, why not pull your goalie when the draw, because you don't think the other team will go down and score in less than 10 seconds after a faceoff. That's the only thing I could think of why they would pull a goalie.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty dumb.
It seems like they just made a rule for a problem that no one had.
Yeah, that or throwing a game.
One last topic here before
which
we get
to Vegas. If they do it in Vegas, that actually could be a thing.
Mailbag will follow this, but we have to, and I understand we're heads up on Foul Ball Guy.
I like Foul Ball Guy.
I think he needs to get a life.
Why?
Why not? 6,000, 8,000 foul balls. He catches
A-Rod's. Oh.
No, not the baby. The,
yeah,
the guy,
I thought we were
no,
talking about the baby
no,
guy.
No, the hoarder of baseballs.
Okay, yeah, no, I still like him, too. I've gone all the way to liking him. I hated Foul Ball Guy with a passion. Foul Ball Guy's been, I don't know if you know this, Foul Ball Guy's been around for a long time.
He's almost 40.
He's 37. I remember watching, I think it was like HBO Inside Sports with Brian Gumbel or something with Foul Ball Guy like 6 or 7 years ago. So he has been around the block, and I have now gone to the point where I like him. He is the world's – he is the perfect villain. He's – like, he you'll see him giving, like, foul balls to little kids. He's talking about giving the money to charity. And then he's out there grabbing, you know, 10 batting practice foul balls from like all the old ladies trying to just get a souvenir.
His name is Zach Hample on Twitter at Zach_Hample. After he refused to give Major League Baseball the ball from A-Rod's 3,000th hit, he tweeted, "Hey, at A-Rod, I'm the guy who snagged your 3,000th hit. Any chance for a follow back? It would mean a lot."
That was an outrageous move.
That
now I'm
so
going to say
creepy.
Something right now, and this is a call to the three of you because I don't have the wherewithal, and I'm also very, very lazy. I want Foul Ball Guy on this podcast. I bet you he'll come on. He's done everything. He was tweeting about how he was doing some show in Charlotte or something. The guy just wants to talk about foul balls, and I want to talk to him about foul balls. So let's get him on the podcast next week.
Can we make this happen? I think we can. That I see some nods over there. I see a shoulder shrug, too,
though. Know we can make it happen.
Well, what else is he going to do?
He's got nothing else. He's got foul balls and talking about foul balls, so let's talk about foul
balls.
Well,
we usually tape this between 4 and 5. That's prime batting practice
hours. I'll do it in the morning. I'll do it in the middle of the night. I don't care. I want to talk to foul. Maybe we'll just do a special podcast that's all Foul Ball Guy.
Okay. All right. We'll try and do that. Let's get into the mailbag here. And, Alan, you had a topic you wanted to start off with. So before we get into the tweets, I'll let you kick this thing off.
Yeah, I was thinking about this today. Question for both you guys. What would your favorite variety or flavor of Oreo cookies be?
There's different Oreo cookies?
Yeah, you got like double stuffed. You got the vanilla.
Oh, double stuffed.
You have the golden Oreos.
No, see.
There's Reese's peanut butter Oreos.
The watermelon ones.
Oh, that's terrible.
No, listen. When it comes to the classics, Oreos, when you're talking about cereal, all that kind of stuff, chips, Doritos, you stick with what works and what's worked through the years. If you want to go double stuff, that's fine. More of something is fine. But when they start to do these weird like key lime pie and all this crap, no thanks. The Doritos, I saw there was a Dorito bag. I sound like an old guy like sitting on his lawn yelling to get the kids off. But there was a Dorito bag that was like, you don't even know what flavor it is. You just put your hand in, grab a Dorito, you have no idea what flavor it is.
Like the mystery lollipop?
Screw that. Stick with what works. You go Cool Ranch, you go nacho cheese, you go double stuff, you go your regular cereals, you know, Lucky Charms. You don't try to just jazz it up or do anything weird. I'm a traditionalist through and through.
So you didn't eat purple ketchup when that came out?
No.
Green ketchup?
I'll say the only thing that I will stray from, and it still blows my mind, I still would love for someone to explain to me how it works, is the crystal clear Pepsi. Still don't get that.
So we just learned that Big Cat didn't drink the Diet Dr. Pepper vanilla cherry,
no,
whatever the
gross.
Hell that
was. I do love cherry Coke. That's actually the best Coke in the land.
Young Walt Disney wants to know, let's say there is a treasure map on the back of the Declaration of Independence. How hard would you try and steal it?
Isn't there a Nick Cage movie about this?
National Treasure. Wasn't that what it was called? Yeah.
Yeah, National Treasure.
I love Nick Cage. If I'm being honest, it's a good question, but for me, it's a zero. I would try to steal it 0% of my life because
I don't like federal prison.
No, that's not even
it.
Well, no.
Oh, that's not what it's about?
No. A treasure map? I mean, then I got to do so much work.
You didn't like the Goonies growing up?
I liked the Goonies, but that was when I was a little kid. Now I'm an old, lazy man. So don't make me work for it. Just tell me where it is. This is the age of the iPhone. I can pull up a map in 2 seconds and be, you know, get directions to where I want to go. I don't need to do this whole treasure map and going and finding secret stuff. I just don't care.
Anthony LaRocca, do you guys think LeBron's Instagrams would have gotten more or less likes if he included Kevin Love?
Well, so I have a running bit that he's not including Kevin Love for a reason because Kevin Love's not part of his clique until Kevin Love got hurt, and then everyone did the pity party for Kevin Love. So I wrote the blog today basically reminding Kevin Love that before you were hurt, just remember who had your back. No one. No one in the Cleveland Cavaliers had your back. You weren't involved in any of their Instagram pictures. I don't know. LeBron can do anything. LeBron can fart and the world will just go crazy.
Breaking news on the mothership,
yeah,
right?
And I'm part of the problem. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that like I'm just, you know, don't talk about LeBron. I love talking about LeBron. I love talking about how much I hate LeBron. But he can do anything at this point and the world will go nuts.
Crimson asks, why does Fred Flintstone keep putting the giant rib on his car if he knows that it will tip over?
why are you asking a question about Fred Flintstone? That's a better question.
That is a better question.
Like, what? That one's pass? Got me for...
Do we pass on that one?
I don't even know if it's a pass. It's more like, come on, man. When we ask for questions, let's just... I thought it was implied that we're not doing Fred Flintstone questions.
Well, I guess not. From now on, we have an embargo.
Disclaimer, no Fred Flintstone questions.
Here's a sports question from Caroline Roper. Recently saw an NFL writer publish an all-NFC North team. Which Bears would you put on your all-NFC North team? Kyle Long is at the top of the list.
Yeah. Kyle has it nice right now because he's the only bright spot on the Bears. Let's see. Does Alshon make it? No, because Megatron and...
You get two receivers.
Jordy Nelson, probably.
Or Randall Cobb, if he stays.
Yeah. So
running back Forte, does he make it over Peterson? No.
Nope.
Quarterback? Nope.
That's tough. Maybe tight end? Yeah, Martellus would make it.
On this article on the NFL.com website, Jeffrey and Bennett were the only ones to make it. So they didn't even put Kyle Long on there, which
That's
is a mistake.
Crazy.
That's pretty stupid.
I think this year going forward, we could see who could make it this year. That's the question.
Kyle Fuller?
Kyle Fuller could make it. Matt Forte, no, he's probably too old. I think Alshon obviously could, because Megatron's actually getting kind of old. So I think Alshon could be the guy who you could replace Megatron with. And that's no knock on Calvin Johnson. He's been an unbelievable receiver, but he's definitely getting a little old. It's tough. Those kind of questions just bum me out. I don't know about you, but I'm just bummed after talking about that.
Pick us back up. Cole Hanna, who would you rather have on your respective Chicago sports team? Carl Anthony Towns with the Bulls or Connor McDavid with the Blackhawks? Of course, Connor McDavid, the number one pick in waiting in the NHL.
Well, you'd have to say Carl Anthony Towns just because of need, right?
I'll take Towns.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you'd love McDavid, but the Blackhawks are fine what they are. The Bulls, Carl Anthony Towns is the best player in that draft, I believe. Do you know that he's like an unbelievable 3-point shooter, but Calipari never let him shoot threes?
Yeah, he told him his job was to stay in the paint and get rebounds.
That guy's going to be a beast in the NBA.
Well, they've already compared him to Tim Duncan.
That's some pretty high praise there.
And
what,
there are the workout videos.
Second best power forward of all time?
Who's better than him? Don't tell me Karl Malone.
Yeah, I hate Karl Malone, so.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's not Barkley either, so I think Duncan's the best. Last question. This is from Dave Farley. You talked about the draft a little bit earlier. Who do you want the Bulls to take?
Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, that's the easiest answer, right?
Yeah, okay. How about a 22?
I actually like that Portis guy. I'm going to stick with him.
Bobby Portis?
Yeah.
If he's there, I want Jerrion Grant from Notre Dame. I like him.
Oh,
with the
God.
Ball, without the ball.
Notre Dame, come on. I just hate Notre Dame.
Well, that's a different problem.
I am that kind of, I try not to be a meatball, but I am a meatball when it comes to that stuff. I'll absolutely hate you. I hated Joakim Noah when the Bulls drafted him. I was like, I hate Florida. I hate Billy Donovan. Obviously, he came around to that. So I'm not saying I won't hate him forever, but I'll hate you when I draft
like
you.
Sounds like a personal problem.
Oh, it's absolutely a personal problem. At least I admit it, right?
Yeah.
At least I'm self-aware.
That's the first step. Also, P. Mills asked, are these episodes on iTunes? They are. They have been for about a week. Search for the Shootaround, WGN Plus. You can get all the episodes you may have missed. Anything that I may have missed in this last 50 minutes or so that you'd like to throw out there?
I don't know. That's a good show. I'm a little tired. I haven't been sleeping very well, so I feel like I was doing this a little bit high almost. See
how
it goes.
Thanks for sharing. I appreciate you sharing. You didn't give me your little baggie beforehand. But
No. It has nothing to do with actually being high. It's just I'm a little sleep deprived. I actually think I do better sleep deprived because I kind of just go with whatever's in my brain. I probably repeated myself a few times.
No, you're fine. Thanks to Brett. Thanks to Alan for Barstool Big Cat. I'm Sam Panionovich. You can follow him on Twitter at Barstool Big Cat. Read him at BarstoolSports.com. I'm at SP Shoot. We will see you next week, and hopefully there are more things on the arise as we are prepared for baseball. We'll have a Bulls pick. You'll have some Blackhawk trades. Is it Sharp?
Sharp's
gone. Is it Bickle?
Gone.
And that hurts you. The mustache just twinged.
He's a friend of mine. What am I going to say?
I know.
I would like to party with the cup. I'd like to keep partying with the cup. I'm just going to have to make friends with TVR, who's like 23. So
or Victor Svedberg, who's 6
no,
feet
TVR
nine.
And Darling are friends of mine now, too, but they don't, they're not good enough yet. They got to get better.
This is the Shoot Around, WGN Radio and WGN Plus. We'll see y'all next week.